Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm feeling really collaborative.
Are you? You've been thinking about that one. You knew I was going to ask you that.
And I'm feeling really strong from the union that you and I have doing our podcast together.
Do you think we are collaborative as a pair?
Big time.
They're confusing with us.
And also, I feel like... it's actually made my life a better place, this podcast.
Oh.
And it's made me realise, how great real friendships are.
Oh. Are you talking about our friendship?
Yeah. Because I've enjoyed, every single minute of it.
Oh.
And I came to this place of realisation through doing research about today's incredible guests.
Yes, amazing.
Because what I love about both of them is their generosity of spirit and the way that rather than pretending that they're making art in a vacuum and that each one of them is somehow a genius on their own, they're very much acknowledging their peers and supporting their peers. And through each other's successes, they make each other stronger. And I think it's a really important message for young artists and also young musicians and young everybody to think about this, because and also to acknowledge the influences that
of other people
throughout the whole of your life,
whether
that be family or whether it be other artists or whether it be musicians, and the idea that everything
peers, is having the support peers, of peers
definitely.
And respecting your peers and looking at their work and collaborating with them.
And the other thing before we introduce them that I love is that they're not necessarily obsessed with the Instagram generation either. I feel like they're very much in the real world and reflecting the actual world that we're living in, like as in humans to humans, you know, and like the what we're eating and what we're thinking and what museums we visit and all that kind of thing. I think the actual real world is the most important thing that comes through their work as well, and that I'm really connecting to.
Wow, Rob.
So we would like to welcome
to Talk Art.
Alvaro Barrington and Teresa Farrell.
Hi,
Welcome, guys.
Hi. You guys started harmonizing.
We always do.
At the end.
We in tune everything. Yeah,
Teresa Farrell!
It's like a game show, isn't it?
You're winning a car.
I wish we had a car to give you guys, but maybe
amazing.
We will one day.
I wouldn't be able to afford the taxes, right? That's why when you win a prize, it's like, it sucks, right?
Yeah, totally. Because you haven't got to insure it and put it on the road. You don't really think of that.
Don't give me a car.
And put petrol in it, gas.
I don't have a license either, but that reminds me of all the people that won cars when Oprah was giving them out.
Yes, and I think Ellen then copied her sometimes, no? I think Oprah and Ellen both do it, maybe.
Yeah. You see
like they give
hysteria,
tickets to concerts.
Hysteria
or they give
videos on YouTube, but they kind of like link them all together and you just see everyone in the audience. They're fascinating, the reactions. When
I'll
they realise they've won like $10 gift card for something and they'll freak out.
You've won $10!
What if you go to the one episode where you don't get anything? I want to see that reaction.
Yeah, furious.
Somebody's out there in the world like, fuck that shit. I came all the way out here and Ellen didn't give me a car.
So we're here at the Emmeline Gallery
in London.
In Shoreditch. And you guys have got a duo show on. You've got a collaborative show. You're working together, and the show is called
Tall Boys and a Double Shot Espresso.
Yes, Tall Boys and a Double Shot Espresso. And what is that title about? And how did you two come to collaborate on this show together?
It's got more than one goofy meaning, right? But it sort of goes all the way back to. I mean, it's kind of what we run on. So like we used to live in Brooklyn. Well, I still do, but we used to live like a couple blocks from each other, drinking tall boys on the stoop.
What's a tall boy?
Oh, it's like a tall, skinny can of beer. I think you guys say like tinnies or something.
Tinnies, yeah.
But it's a tall, skinny one.
Skinny one.
So it's like 22 ounces. Do you guys have it?
I mean, I never drank really until recently, so I don't even know what a tin of beer is.
Welcome aboard.
I drink champagne now, but that's about it.
This is like four or five years ago.
But do you put it in like a brown paper bag sort of tinny? Is it that sort of thing?
But if you're on the stoop with a closed gate, you don't get a ticket.
Wow.
Tall boys in the evening and double shots of espresso in the morning was, look, we went to school together, we partied at night together.
So you went to Hunter College in New York, and that's where you guys met.
Yeah.
And did you know from the off that you kind of were drawn to each other, or you thought each other was cool?
Kind of, but we also found out, like, we have, like, a long history of
overlapping. You know, like for instance, one of his really good friends from high school went to a really small elementary school that I also went to in a totally different borough.
Yeah, so Jade Hurtado, who performed here this summer.
Mm. What was his name? Who?
Jade
Hurtado. Her name's Jade. Okay. She's Blind Benny is her band.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Of course she and I remember each other because we were grades apart, but there's like 10 kids per class. So it's like, right. I was like, yeah, of course I know that girl. She was like the lead in the school play.
Yeah.
But, and then like, I went to high school and sat next to his cousin in our marching band practice. Like, so once we got to know each other, all like these other pieces.
The links all came in. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Weird ones like that.
And you were at Hunter College for how long?
Too long.
Way too long.
We were super, super seniors.
You were like, do I have to leave just yet?
No, we kept dropping out, skipping things. It was like, you know.
But I had an interview where you described that you would go to MoMA or the Met and you would literally sit in front of a painting for 8 hours together and just like study it and lose yourself in it.
Easily.
Well, kind of. We used to call ourselves the trifecta. Richard, Teresa, and me. T would go and like, she's got like this crazy eye where she would see something and then leave like in the gallery. And then Richard and me were like kind of studious nerds and we'd be there for 8 hours. And then we'd go to Teresa and Teresa would have seen it within like the 5 minutes that she was there. But Richard and I would just kind of be there like nerding out.
And you'd be sketching and stuff or just involved in it, absorbing it? Or
We would sketch a lot of the works. We would kind of figure out, you know, that sort of... Damn, Richard's not even here, but it'd be good if he came through one day.
Yeah.
But Richard
Kwan, what up?
Yeah, what up?
Is he back in New York now,
live?
Brooklyn? Or in Brooklyn, is he?
Nah, he's been in China forever.
Oh, right.
He's been in China, like, even when we were a Hunter,
Queens, right?
But he's like what they call an ABC, an American-born Chinese.
Cool.
Ah.
First generation.
And what sort of paintings would these be? Can you remember the first ones you geeked out in front of for a long time?
We did mostly sculpture work because we did a sculpture class and then we started drawing
I remember like that Picasso fisherman painting.
Yeah, that was sick.
Night Fishing at Elle's.
Yeah.
Arles. It's the most amazing one. And MoMA, the fourth floor. That's my favorite Picasso of all time.
We spent a whole half a day in front of that.
Yeah. Just before the war broke out, that was painted. So it was like, this is meant to feel like it's a moment of peace, but like on the horizon, there's darkness coming, but you've got this kind of village and there's like the girls at the side of ice creams and they're fishing and it's all beautiful, but you know it's going to fucking descend into hell very, very quickly. And it's like capturing that moment. Yeah, that painting's phenomenal.
That's interesting because I think we were just looking at the decision making.
Right.
I wasn't even thinking about the actual looming war. We were just thinking about like how he had the fish emptied out or like, you know, how he's breaking up the space and shit. I think we're more thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, it was a color one of that scale. The only other one did like that was Guernica, and that was in black and white. But that one, the scale of that one with the animals and... because you had like a dog there as well, animals and humans. The figuration of it was like rare.
I remember going to see the Guernica in Madrid and feeling incredibly sad afterwards.
Yeah, well, it is
sad. It's so like intense
though. Face.
And it really made me realize the power of Picasso. Until that point, I think I'd seen him as this kind of like very commercial, you know, mainstream kind of
sexist
thing. And for that reason, I just didn't really think much about him. But when I saw that massive painting in Madrid, I remember being really moved by it and incredibly sad. Like, I wanted to cry almost. Like, it was just, it's so well done. And that's interesting that you would sit and, like, draw. Because drawing's a big thing.
Night Fish and Tevers, that's what it's called.
I didn't draw at the museum. You had a sketchbook.
Yeah, yeah, I still draw at the museum.
So for
both... Do you still do that now?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you done it in London?
Yeah.
Where have you been and seen? What have you seen?
What was the last thing I drew? I kind of left my sketchbook on the table because I lost one yesterday, like 2 days ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I was almost to the last page, too.
Oh, someone's going to pick that up and be like, gold. Like,
when you draw at the museum, don't people like come up and try to talk to you? That's why I don't do it.
Well, they want to find out what you're drawing, why you're drawing, come and have a look.
People think that, like, if it's almost like if I'm doing nothing, no one comes up to me. But if I'm drawing, which you would think would deter people from trying to, like, I don't know,
distract
engage.
You or engage. It's like, yeah. I'm busy, guys. Yeah. You can see I'm busy. Why
I'm
are you
also afraid
it?
Of people, like, when I'm out in the wild, I'm afraid people are going to talk to me. So I try not to do stuff like that.
People come up to me at different occasions. Like, they'll come, say, you want to go to a sex party?
This happens in art galleries.
This happens in London. You guys love that shit out here.
No one's invited me to a sex party.
Me
What's
either.
Wrong with me?
I don't know.
This can't be at Tate Britain. Well, surely look, this isn't happening.
One second.
I'm drawing though.
I want to talk about something. So you both make paintings, yeah? But not only paintings, but it's a part of both of your practice. And I know that drawing for you, Alvaro, was a big thing when you were growing up. And that in your childhood, you were kind of known as the kid that would be known for drawings.
Yeah.
And making drawings. So is that an important part of your of making paintings for you? Like the actual studying and drawing?
Yeah, because it lets me kind of break down what I'm seeing when I'm working through something. You know, like you kind of painting and then I like maybe draw like a figure that already put in there, and then it kind of helps me see the figure a little bit more, see what's happening around it, and then I kind of compare notes, and then I actually sometimes even stick it on the painting to make sure, and then come back the next day and then take a look and make sure what I'm seeing, because I think a lot of times, you know, as a student, you kind of meet. I remember Drew used to talk about our old professor Drew Beatty, but you talk to artists and you say what your painting's about. And then they would, like, have all this fucking crazy fantasy about the work. Like, yeah, it's Brexit and Boris Johnson eating a fat dick. Yeah. And then you see it, and it's just, like, a Jamaican flag or something. And you go, what the fuck is that? That's a Jamaican flag, bro. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's just, like, I think drawing just sort of makes sure that what I'm seeing and what I'm telling people I'm seeing is actually what they're seeing.
Right. And what's drawing like for you, then? Because you just
I'm
said
a Drosaurus Rex,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You go in on it.
Yeah.
Drosaurus Rex, did you say?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I too was the kid in class that, like, someone, can you draw cornrows on this character for me? Because I couldn't finish it myself. And then I'd be like, yeah, sure, I got you. Like, I was that kid. But, I don't know, then you grow up and you don't stop drawing. I don't know, and you just hope people still want your drawings.
Yeah. But you were saying, like, so there's a message then with your art. Do you feel like there's a message you want to get across to people? Like, when you're making work, do you make it for yourself, or are you conscious of an audience seeing your work and what you want them to feel?
I take the long history of painting into it. I go, damn, could you see this? Especially now, because you got, like, I think when we opened the show, Peter Doig had a show up.
Yeah.
Chris, Lynette had a show.
Chris
and Jasmine had a show up. Albert Olin had a show up. You know, two shows up.
It's been intense. Lisa Bryce
had a show.
Yeah, are you kidding me? God.
Yeah, you go. You know what I mean? And then you're like,
I might as well go home.
And you're in the neighborhood and you want to be like,
yeah.
Oh, you don't want to be like, oh, fuck that shit. That shit is corny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because it's like you ever, I think of it like, you ever think somebody's cute and then somebody cuter comes along and then you go, oh, they're not that cute. You know what I mean?
It's all relative, yeah.
It's all relative. So yeah. I feel like, you know, we're having this show. I was just like, damn, I don't want to be like looking and then
you don't want to be the ugly sister.
You don't want to be the ugly sister and then, but somebody thought you were cute before the ugly sister.
Before your older sister walked in the room. I don't have any sisters, but.
Word. You know, so it's like, there's that. I mean, maybe because of my it's a bit of competitive nature.
Are you also quite competitive, like, then?
Yeah, but you know, T will do, but it's like not even...
With each other or just like...
Everything, you know?
Is he?
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun, okay.
Yeah.
Like, she has keys to my studio. You know, we just want to make sure, like, that
you got
she
keys
does...
to mine.
Yeah, I got keys to hers. But it's just like, we want to make sure at least she walks in and go, oh, that shit is cool.
So you critique each other. You're quite happy to do that.
Yeah.
And it's part of it.
It's part of it. Actually, one of the best criticism I had this year was that I was making those white paintings upstairs.
At the Sadie show.
And it was like maybe 4 or 5 days of no sleep, just like going through it.
Friends coming in and out of town. Brandon was DJing, right?
Yeah.
Like Brandon was playing like that Can record.
Yeah.
You were like bleary eyed. I've been painting for like 2 days. I came in from that party or that weird disco. I went to some disco here, did some ketamine, came in, and Al was like, what do you think? And I was like,
And then she's like, yo, I think, she was like, it's these two white paintings. It was one that, and she was like, you know, they're doing the same thing. They're both good paintings, but they're doing the same thing. And of course you could sell it because you're Albert Barrington. Somebody wants your painting, but they're doing the same thing. And I'm not
two people want that painting.
Yeah, two paintings. And I'm not really interested in that. And of course I was like, yeah, I'm not trying to. Even though those white paintings are all white, they're all doing something internally.
But there's color underneath. There's like a Jasper Johns flag feeling underneath, and then it's Robert Ryman over the top, and it's...
That's a funny breakdown.
That's what I saw.
Saying Kandinsky palette, like, also hidden underneath.
But all of them is in there. Kandinsky.
Yeah, because you're a real absorber of art history. It's a cool breakdown.
Yeah.
But it was just like, I was like, I don't want to make the same... I don't want people to walk in and just feel like they're looking at the same painting.
So what did you take from that critique, and how did you change or
Well, I think adapt we're both like we're both like not trying to repeat ourselves in any painting.
You fucked with the composition. You like distributed the levels of like you changed it. I don't know. I woke up the next day. You stayed up another night. So that was like 48 like 30 I don't know how many you had been up for days at that point, and I just like crawled back into your studio, and you had totally changed the whole energy of the one painting on the right. You worked back into the back into the front. The composition changed. Mm-hmm. It was just.
What a wonderful thing. I love the fact you two have this connection. Because for listeners who are listening right now, you can like see the energy between these two artists. Like it's so strong though, your connection. I love it. Mm. And it's so brilliant to think of this idea of conversation somehow, and how that trust you both have and the understanding of where you've both come from before you were well-known artists, and then what you're growing into and where you're heading to the future. I feel like this conversation is so important to both of your progress. And it's interesting. I just bumped into Stanley Whitney the other day and Marina Adams, who I love so much. I've known them both in New York for quite a long time. And I've always been interested in their marriage as well, and this idea that they have a conversation constantly, and she's making her work and he was making his work. And even though their work's quite different, you can definitely see overlaps between the two. Like, and I love that idea of conversation in art. Like, it's something that I've always grown up being into with Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, like all these people that were my teenage crushes in a way. But I think it's so cool because these days, like, there's a few artists in London I know who seem to be quite open about their gang almost.
Yeah.
But with you guys, I feel like it's really present. Like when Alvaro did his show at MoMA PS1,
yes,
you actually had Teresa's work in the exhibition, and another friend of yours,
Christine Bracci, who's in here too.
Yeah, we have a clock ceramic sculpture of hers on our bed.
Oh, right.
The bed in the show.
Well, that's when I first
saw... We don't have a bed and we're not... That's the other thing about all those duos you named is we're not romantically.
No, I know, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was actually the point I was trying to get to. But the thing that's different with you guys is that it's almost like friendship.
It's
a deep thing though.
But I guess the biggest word that you said was trust. That's been our driving force, I think.
Because I remember, I forgot where I was, but I was away for like 2 weeks, and I was crazy tired, and I was like, yo, let me go to the studio to see some shit, and then you had left that sax painting in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I swear, like, I got so much life. I was just like, let me start painting. I was ready.
So this is a woman playing the saxophone with her vagina.
It's a woman summoning the Duke of Hell. that creature in the window is Amduceus, which is the Duke of Hell, and he's usually depicted.
Who's the Duke of Hell? Satan.
Well, you know, in like the Book of Demons, there's like multiple demons.
No, what's the Book of Demons?
To be honest, I don't know either because I've never studied demons.
You guys made me feel like a weirdo.
No, you're not a weirdo. We want to know. Tell us, what's the Book of Demons?
Well, there's like there's a bunch of different demons. Like, there's not just Satan.
Like gods. Like, there's different gods. There's different.
Well, even in biblical, like, there's not. You know, the.
It's like Greek like, gods. Like, you got Zeus, like, and you got the Paris. The one that you call Achilles
Satan was
and...
Lucifer. But, right. like that's just that one.
Yeah.
So there's more.
Right. And this one has, like, two forms. But, like, he has, like, a man form that he comes to Earth in. And then also. Also, I'm not religious. This is, anyway, it doesn't matter. But anyways, like, and then his unicorn one, his unicorn form. But the unicorn form always has, like, horns on his back, like musical horns, like French, like whatever the archaic French horn equivalent is, all this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I played saxophone, as I said, when I was a kid in marching band in high school. And so saxophone was sort of my go-to. And I just thought, you know, if you're going to, if a woman's going to summon the Duke of Hell, she probably, Amduceus in particular, she's probably going to use, like, a musical instrument. And then I just, you know, I'm always taking it to the next step. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. Well, how? You're not just going to play it. That's just playing music. I don't know. Whatever. That's how that thing
happens. Has anyone looked at that painting and gone, oh, that's what she's doing there. She's summoning the Duke of Hell with the saxophone with a vagina. Has anyone taken
that? Yeah. Two friends of mine.
Really?
Actually. Yeah. Yeah, wow. Well, but they're also into demons. And they also know what I do and how my brain works. So
yeah.
So I don't know. No stranger yet.
Love
that's
that.
Cool. That's so cool.
So that painting that you're describing that's in the show here then inspired you to go and make a work?
Well, I think I'd landed from the airport and I needed to get something from the studio.
Did you just come back from Captiva?
Maybe. No, because Alex drove me from Captiva. It was like somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But then...
You were right about to go. You were... Or something. I don't remember. Maybe.
It was somewhere, but I knew I came in. It couldn't have been Captiva because Alex said... Or maybe it was. Oh, you know what? Me and my bro, I was down at the Robert Rauschenberg residency in Captiva, Florida. You're probably right, because I was there for like a month. And then my
Because that's why I started that giant painting, because he was gone at this residency and... I just took over your studio,
and I
didn't clear out before you got back. You got back early. Something happened where all my shit was
super
everywhere.
Late. My bro, like, we got a U-Haul truck, and we did 24 hours from Florida to New York. And it was, like, crazy mad because my bro had to go to work the next morning. So, like, I was dumb tired, got in the studio, and I was ready to go sleep. Because I'm like 10 minutes. My studio was 10 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. But I walked in and I saw that. You had messaged me like, yo, I got some stuff in the studio. I'll come get it whenever. I walked in and I saw that painting. Because you had sent me like some prequel shots of the work.
You weren't
of the
into
sketches.
It. You were like, you haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
I was sending you those progress shots.
And then when I came in, it was just... And also the thing with Teresa's work is that they don't really... And when you were talking about Instagram culture, even my paintings, like, they don't really, even though we're both involved in Instagram, they don't really work on Instagram so well or work through the phone.
That's the same for most art, isn't it? You have to see it in the flesh.
Yeah, but then there is a certain type of art, actually, that does go really well on Instagram.
Yeah.
And even that whole, like, post-internet generation, like, where they almost, like, set it up for the camera. I remember there being a whole group of students about 6 years ago in London who were, like, doing all their shows almost through the lens so that it would look good on Instagram. And I was like, really? This is crazy. But then I started to realize that was the point of what they were doing and that was their kind of concept in a way. But I was never that convinced by that because, what I like about both of your work is that you do stand in front of it and you have a relationship with it, like, and it's fresh when you see it for the first time, you know what I mean, like,
even our long that's the other thing about Tall Boys is we got four long skinny paintings, two of his, two of mine, one of his is horizontal. That was like the Tall Boys thing also, but we were referring to them as the Tall Boys the whole time we were like thinking about this show. But that's the other thing, is even the cropping doesn't work on Instagram. Like, how are you... That long, skinny thing did not...
It's working a square, does it?
Yeah,
No.
And even they even adjusted it a little bit so you can have, like, a vertical, but the Tall Boys are still too long.
I actually went to your website, Teresa.
And
I was looking at...
I don't have a website.
Okay, well, keep that secret. But anyway, there's a list of painting earlier. No, don't be embarrassed. It's your history. It's fine.
Yo, you know... Why? Because we're...
We're going to
IKEA, and she was like, yo, you think I should delete my website? I was like,
why use an IKEA? Something about IKEA made you think about it.
Yeah. fucking what's that guy's name? Some dude that birch segment that's in the show is the only thing from that time period in the show, and it's on that weird blog.
Exactly. No, but what I was going to say is when you scroll down, so you're looking at some of your work,
yeah.
and then you scroll down, and there's this really long painting, and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen, because you had to, like, I was on my telephone, and you have to, like, really scroll. To get to the end. No, but it was genius. Yeah. It's like one of the first times I've ever had that experience on the internet. Yeah. So thank you for giving me something new.
I was just trying to fuck with you, man.
Yeah.
Before I knew you.
It doesn't matter if it's old work. I think it's interesting because it's where you know, it doesn't look bad. It's interesting. But it's like young, interesting work, I guess, on the website.
I made that painting after like a trip to Vermont where there's tons of those trees. But we had this weird German photographer as our painting teacher, which was inherently frustrating to me because he didn't get anything I was trying to do. So he couldn't really help me as far as I was concerned. And one of the things he came into my studio and said was, why are you painting all these birch trees? Like, what is this, to decorate people's houses? Like, this is something you see at IKEA.
Oh, I see.
And I was like, motherfucker, I just...
And we were going to IKEA.
Well, that's what I thought of it when we were going to IKEA. And I was like, should I delete my... I was in IKEA.
Right.
And I was like, I got to delete my website. But I had come from this, like, crazy camping trip with my then boyfriend. So, like, fucking Reiner was he was out of place saying that, because I was painting from real shit, actually, not IKEA.
I think it's good to paint birch trees.
It is.
Here's to
you
nature.
You paint birch trees?
No, not trees. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are like the tall boy trees in the
That's why we included that work, because that's like a really old painting of mine, and like Alvaro's painting trees nowadays, and we thought it was a funny like correlation.
I made that tree thinking about your tree.
Don't make me blush.
So you were exhausted, and then you saw the painting, Teresa's painting, Summoning the Devil, and you were then like, I need to sleep, but you were just inspired and then started making work.
I made paintings, but I fucked up a bunch of paintings that night. Because I was just like, I was still tired. Like, we still drove like 24 hours. But my mind was racing.
It was alert, yeah.
And my mind was like, damn, she did, that shit is crazy. I didn't even see. Because it was kind of like, when you see it in the phone, it's like a little bit, everything is flat. You don't really get to see what's really happening. So in a way, I was sort of like, you know, I told her, I was like, when I see it, I see it. Like, I can't really say anything about it. When I see it, I see it. But it was still like kind of a disappointing photograph of like a work that wasn't really like what you were going to experience. And so when I came in there, I was like, not really knowing that, all right, I'm gonna see it. And then I saw it and it was just like, what the fuck? All right, I gotta paint,
you know?
And then it kind of ran off.
I heard an amazing thing you said about you'd been painting for a long, long time, like decades or whatever. And then one day you pushed paint out of the tube onto the canvas, and I think it fell down on the canvas or something. And then it was this
work.
Yeah, and then it was a very physical moment where you realized the possibilities of paint beyond everything you had learnt and beyond all the history of art. Like, can you
that
talk
about
that weird hand,
oh my god, that's still maybe my favorite painting you've ever made.
That's probably one of well, you know what, we had this moment.
Where is that? Who has it?
It's in the garbage.
Shut up.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I had an interview at a university that's not going to be named, and the person and the person like said some wild shit about it.
Oh, that sucks.
And they looked and they were like, "Yo, can you doom 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 doom?" And they said some crazy shit, and they started like free zone associating. And
what does that mean?
We were talking about it earlier. That's the shit we don't like. That's why he was saying he draws so much. Like, when people look at your work and like. You painted a table with an ashtray and some stacks of papers, and then someone is like looking at whatever the space in the room of the background is, and they're like, but I can see like there's like aliens and like there, you know, a parrot, and you're just like, dude, come on, that's paint.
Yeah, it's kind of like it was our professor.
Like, free zone associated. Isn't really helpful. It's just like, go look at the clouds, like
outside. Go look at the clouds, you know, like if you want to do that.
Yeah.
It was like, it's a kind of carry.
So they're looking into it more, you mean, than you intended, or they're trying to find stuff to show off, or
it doesn't seem like they're looking at it more to find something deeper. It's like they're trying to. At that point, it's like there's no. It's not really a conversation anymore.
Yeah. It's like, well, it kind of came out of Kerry James Marshall.
True.
Professor Drew used to tell this Kerry James Marshall story when they used to teach at University of Chicago. Like, he was saying that there's this kid who drew this, who did this. Anyway, Kerry used to say, like, when you look at his work, you know, you look at a Kerry James Marshall work, it's like a black woman walking through the park. You don't, like, he doesn't, the last thing that you could say about his work is like, oh, look at that woman who's about to pull out a gun and shoot that Martian. And then, you know, you start, like, free zone associating. And
you project the story onto it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what he painted very delicately and deliberately is what he wants you to reflect on. And it was like, I painted this painting, and this person was like free zone associating, and it was just like, I was like, what the fuck? I got and then I just threw it away because I thought, I never want that to happen to my paintings again.
It's not that like we're making this didactic work, but it's like there's just a certain line that it's hard to articulate. You know when there's a narrative in place and when you're running away with it, and when there's an abstraction, and when you're just like, I don't know, man. I don't mind people internalizing like what I've painted.
Yeah.
But there's something else about free zone associating. There's a line in between somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a bit disrespectful to the work?
I think it's goofy. It's just like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I never thought about this before. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bit like
sort of in deep thought about this right now.
So I first saw your work, Alvaro, at MoMA PS1. And they had recreated your studio from Slade in London, and then by Klaus Bischenbach, who used to run MoMA, he saw your work and took the whole studio, and that was the first time that's happened, I think, isn't it? Has that been done
I don't
before?
Know if it's the first time. I mean, you know, there's been studios recreated in spaces.
But a student...
Yeah,
studio,
an emerging artist studio.
He threw your whole London studio in a truck and brought it back to New York.
Yeah, but
how
I also
did that
think,
come about? How did that happen?
I mean, it's like a long story, but I also think like the idea of studentship and like is sort of weird for me, because I think hopefully I'm still a student at 90. You know what I mean? So it's it just happened that I graduated from a school. But being in art school don't make you any... Like, I think there's a lot of ego behind, like, these awkward, like, you're at a gallery. That doesn't mean shit. You may be making horrible work.
I agree with you, but I think there's something to be said about the fact that Klaus saw your studio. Because, like, okay, for example, you were like, it's been done before. Like, yeah, when they recreate, like, Dieter Roth and his son's studio, it's so that... us as the viewer can sort of go travel in time and see how they worked and put together what we already know about their work. This was like someone we've never, and I'm someone we've never seen before. Already we get to see his studio. That's what was a little bit unique,
exactly,
I think, about.
In
Do
Dublin,
you know what I mean?
You can go and see Francis Bacon's recreation of the studio, but that's a different thing, because there's a whole myth.
It's historical, though.
Like Dalí's
this
house
is,
in Spain.
You
were like
this is new, MoMA. You know what I mean?
Your
is
work
like,
was new to a lot of people at that point, I guess.
What was that like?
I mean,
we're trying to gas his head. He just tried to be humble, and we're like,
No, come on. I mean, it's like, I was really grateful for it, but it was also like a homecoming.
That was awesome,
Because I think, you know, a lot of people, the last time they really saw my work was before I left, you know what I mean?
Where was
a couple
you showing
years
then?
Before. I wasn't even showing.
Just
think
in Hunter. And,
yeah. And then we did like a project.
Bushwick.
We did like a Bushwick shit. At
did
her.
You?
Yeah, we had a little like show at our friend's wood shop. We'd throw a bunch of paintings on the wall.
And that was cool. But it was like, I wasn't really eager to show, because I really thought I wanted the work to kind of be able to situate itself next to like my favorite painters.
One of the things I loved that I heard from that experience of doing that show, which also included Teresa's painting, was that you'd created a space that you felt like your cousins, for example, or your family could come into the gallery, into a museum where they might not normally go to, and they sort of felt like it was a space that was there for them as much as it was for, like, the art world, say, and that you were somehow trying to create a space for, like, a bigger audience in a way. Is that accurate?
Something like that. I mean, I think, you know, it was... I became aware, another thing is like, I was super grateful for it. I was super grateful to Klaus for believing in it and believing in me, and just thought, man, this would be cool.
Had he known your work before when you was at Hunter?
He came to the studio with Hans Obrist.
Yeah.
That was at Slade, I thought.
That was I'd graduated Slade and had rented out a studio in Bermondsey in South London.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And
how did you end up at Slade from Hunter in New York as someone from Venezuela who then lives in Brooklyn and then goes to Hunter? And then how did you end up at Slade? How did that come about?
I graduated and one of the things that I do all the time is ask people who are smarter than me what I should do next.
Is Teresa one of them people?
No.
In painting, definitely, you know what I mean? But I graduated and I didn't really know what to do next. And Katie Siegel, who taught at, who's like one of the smartest people in the world, was like, oh, you should think about Europe. And then Daniel Boshkoff, who was a professor, was like, oh, why don't you think about like England or something like that? Or Scotland. And then there's an artist who's from here who was like, oh, you should go to Slade. And then
who was that?
It's a long story. It may make it more complicated.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, all right.
We know him. big deal.
And then I was like, oh, all right, cool. And then I they were like, oh, it's going to give you time and space. And I was like, I don't even know what the fuck that means, but all right. I love your work. You're one of my favorite painters. So I just...
Who is this?
But then we ended up going...
Why are you so reluctant to say?
But then we ended up... So then I ended up applying. And at the interview, Alistair McKenven was there and Lisa Milroy. But anyway, I just felt really comfortable in how they organized the program. So that's why I ended up saying, like, all right, yeah. And then I got in.
I also heard that you were interested in the life story of Marcus Garvey, you know? And the fact that he'd been in London.
And he died in Westminster, didn't he?
Is that true?
Well, it's like, actually, that's one of, I mean, one of, there's a lot of things I do in that I want to explore as an artist.
Yeah.
And one of it is Black Caribbean influence on multicultural cities. So all of the shows, actually, for the next, it's kind of like I always describe, the elevator pitch is like, the Marvel Universe characters, where you start with Iron Man and then you kind of unfold it. But I wanted to sort of explore what does the Caribbean influence look on cities like London, New York, LA, right. Paris. So the galleries that I kind of work with all are kind of sharing a kind of Marvel Universe kind of unfolding of immigration from the Caribbean that ended up influencing why my mom ended up in New York and how I ended up being brought up in Brooklyn. So it's like a kind of longer, it starts with Garvey, then it goes to the Windrush generation over here.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn, I mean, in New York, it starts with Garvey who goes to Harlem, then it goes into Malcolm X's mom who leaves Grenada, joins Marcus Garvey's movement, meets Malcolm X's dad. Malcolm X is born. That's where his radicality comes from. Goes to Harlem. And then it goes to Audre Lorde, whose parents come from Grenada, and sort of their influence in terms of helping me understand the larger ways of thinking, especially Audre Lorde, in terms of like femininity, masculinity, and all these other things. So it's really about these small islands and their kind of their ideas that end up shaping the world, but also shaping my own internalized understanding of myself. But it's like a multi-project.
Like, and this is continuing. This is
Yeah. So the first show this year is the first chapter this year is at Sadie, and it's Garvey, and it's called Birth. So it's Garvey being born, but it's also like a kind of my story, my brother Alex's story, and my mom having him, and me watching my mom being pregnant with him. But then it goes into like Garvey forming his radicality. That's next year at Corvey Moore, and then but it's split between Sadie and Tommaso because their spaces are very different.
So Tommaso Corvey Moore of the gallery,
yeah,
because you work with multiple galleries and you.
We do different projects. Yeah. Like, you know, Emmeline, we're here now because we could do this sort of... We did, like, a grunge... I mean, I said grunge, but we did, like, a bunch of shows here, a bunch of concerts here.
In London, everyone called everything post-punk. You don't even have to worry about the genre. Everyone just called every band post-punk.
You know, but we
had post-punk shows.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say Marcus Garvey is, because Marcus Garvey was a Jamaican political figure. He was saying about... understand your heritage and believe in your past. Wasn't it a quote like, if you don't know your past, your history, your stories, then it's like a tree with no roots?
Yeah.
And he's saying all the African Americans, the diaspora, were told to sort of forget where they'd come from and just be American. And he was like, no, it's about, you can still, you can be American, but you need to hold on to the past. And he was spearheading that sort of energy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of quoted as being the father of Pan-Africanism.
What does that mean? What is that?
Which is like, I mean, it's basically... All the things, it's like, I mean, the context of Garvey is that he is an upper middle class Jamaican who moves to the UK around the early 1910. Mm-hmm. And then what's happening with Garvey, but it's also happening with like Picasso and Matisse and them, is that he had never been to Jamaica, but he's looking at Africa. He went to Burbank. And so him and a bunch of other people are looking at Africa to kind of figure out who he is. And like Picasso looking at the African mask and to figure out how to create cubism. All of that is kind of happening at the same moment. So Garvey is sort of thinking of who is thinking about the history of black people and how deep it runs. And so sort of comes up with a lot of ways of uniting black people, thinking about black struggle, talking about black struggle. But he also had, I think, was a very critical person in terms of financing a lot of what became Harlem. Harlem became like a sort of, I think the interesting thing about Harlem versus other multicultural cities is that Harlem, unlike maybe LA or Chicago, had immigrants from the Caribbean, you had black folks coming from the South. It had a kind of multi, you had Italians, you had Puerto Ricans, Irish. You had this sort of zone of multiculturalism that kind of created
a melting pot.
But that ended up kind of, but I think all of like the black folks coming from all these various parts ended up creating this sort of creativity that ended up becoming known as the Harlem Renaissance. Yeah. But he was sort of critical in terms of funding a lot of things, allowing people to buy homes, saving up money so people could buy homes, which I think that sort of infusion of cash created a sort of space that probably is known as one of the greatest moment of creativity within black cultural history over the last 100 years.
Wow.
But he was kind of a real critical figure in that moment.
So it's a celebration of his memory, I guess, and what you're doing, and you're aligning yourself with his memory and creating work in your own narrative.
Well, I think he was part of my understanding of myself, you know, and I think the entire shows, like in Paris, for example, you know, my mom had died when I was about 10 years old, and it became like a big thing that I had to deal with. And then I read Jean-Paul Sartre and his relationship, talking about his relationship to his dad, who had died when he was young, and how it freed him.
Who's this again?
Jean-Paul Sartre, okay. Who's like a existentialist thinker.
Oh, Sartre.
Sartre.
Jean-Paul Sartre, right, yeah.
But his, you know, his partner, Simone de Beauvoir, has a book on kind of watching people die, watching her mom die. And then Franz Fanon, who Sartre wrote the introduction to Wretched of the Earth, they're, of course, all friends. And so the show that I'm doing with Thaddeus in Paris is all about these thinkers, Franz Fanon being a doctor who was in the Algerian War, and of course is having a different relationship to death than Simone de Beauvoir, who's watching her mom at a much older
time.
He's seen
surrounded by death.
But he's a doctor, right, and he's also in a war. Simone de Beauvoir is seeing death from the perspective of her mom,
of a daughter watching her mom die.
Yeah, who like her mom fell and broke her hip, and she's older, and so she's sort of they're each thinking about it from very different perspective,
right,
which sort of has helped me understand my own relationship with death and watching, you know, my grandma had passed away and thinking about that, or thinking about people who had been killed around my neighborhood. So all of it is sort of, all three of them has given me a kind of language and an imagination around the single thing that we all are going to experience. And so the show in Paris, because they're having this conversation in Paris, is about death. So it's not only like, it's just people who've just sort of given me my ideas to help me understand and where those ideas kind of come from.
But is this an is this one body of work now, or is this an ongoing theme you think? No, it's ongoing.
It's like, you know, the shows here is maybe at least 20 shows.
Wow.
Split between two galleries, and then you know, same in New York and LA, you know, wow. So it's like a really long project.
Like the Marvel saga.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
And then you've got the spin-offs and then like Netflix and Disney and everything. Everyone gets story.
But I grew up in that culture.
Is this show between the two of you, is that part of that saga or not?
Nah, that's just, I mean, in a way,
it's a side project.
It's not even my side project. In a way, I mean, T helped me become a better painter. So it's really, as much as Garvey helped me think about some stuff, T helped me become a better painter. So you know, it's just like, of course I should do it. Of course we should do it, you know?
Teresa, how do you think you made him become a better painter?
I didn't.
No,
we pushed each other the time. It was like, even just simple shit, like working alongside each other, just making like, oh, you're staying up another hour? You're not going home yet? I got another
That's
hour
your
in me.
Competitiveness then. Right.
You know, like anything or like, yeah.
Yeah.
Something I mentioned earlier was this idea of like making a gallery or an exhibition a space that people who aren't necessarily art connoisseurs already or have all the knowledge of the art history in their heads already can access art. Like I felt like that's something that's maybe I don't know if it's a conscious concern necessarily to both of you, but it's something that I feel with your work is that I feel like when I walked into the exhibition here, I don't think you have to necessarily know about the history of a painting or whatever. I think there's so much going on in it that you can connect with, even if you came off the street and you knew nothing about art or whatever.
For sure, that's like a part of our vibe.
Which
is the majority of people who go to art galleries don't have like an extensive art history knowledge. They come to art cold and they go, what is this telling me? What am I feeling?
Yeah, and I think we've been trying to encourage people to like
to do
cross
that
threshold and go into an exhibition and see things. And one of the things I liked most about what both of you have done is this idea that you did those like events where you were using music as an almost like a concert or a performance or, you know, you're trying to do these series of events that bring in different audiences to the gallery. So can you talk a bit about that whole process?
Well, I mean, we're both really into community, building community and expanding community and this like non-elitism of like why you should be here. And for some reason, when there's when there's live music and booze, people are way more comfortable than when there's just sterile white walls and art and bright lights. So, I mean, it's not only an icebreaker, it's also music is something our friends do. It's something that I dabble in. It's like, it's just also a part of what makes
us. Again, collaborating more within your peers and bringing more people in, creative people.
Yeah. And so it was almost like a no-brainer that we would have these types of dancing and live music and art performance. Just like we're weaving it together and, you know, we want people to feel welcome and a part of it, not just like looking like, we're not like fish in a bowl, like.
Yeah, I think also because it's like, maybe also because we're, I'm a little bit a contrarian sometimes, and you go to school and school tries to single out your identity. So if you're like, you get on, you become a, you have to choose a major, and that major is the only thing, all the people that you hang out with, all of it, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think we were both kind of oddballs in that, like, in that we had like friends that we actually love outside of life, you know, and we just wanted to celebrate them.
Or like we both were sort of, I think, a little frustrated with the, well, you know, it's an institution and you're in these really close quarters with these people that you didn't choose. Yeah. or didn't choose you, or there's no magnetic force except for like the lottery of like who's gonna be in this building next door, like, mm-hmm. in the door, like, and I think we were fortunate to meet Richard and to meet each other, and I think we're also unfortunate to be around some other people that maybe.
Shout out to Alterans. Shout out to our boy Alterans Gumby.
No, Alterans was awesome. Yeah, no, there's a ton. Like, we had tons of friends, but we also, but
there's also people like, you didn't like.
No, Alterans. That was just a joke. That's funny. The Alterans is our boy, but like, just, you know, just like the, like, how non-institutional this could be. How like people are brought together by real shit organically, and
non-academic, non-elitist, accessible. Yeah, exactly. That's always what we talk arts about. Well said. That's what we say. Yeah. Yes.
Plus, we wanted to party, man. It's just like, you know, well, it's like you wanted to like.
We didn't want to separate it. Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah, like sometimes you paint deliriously tired, or sometimes you're kind of buzzed after a party and you still pick up the paintbrush. It's not like, that's not when you paint better. That's not when you paint worse. It's like, the painting goes through all these stages, everything. Like, it's just this whole symbiotic relationship. So why should it be shown any differently?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like when we had like studio visits at school, and people be like, well, you got to talk about why there's a snare drum in your studio. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's just there for when I get frustrated and I want to bang on it. And it's like, oh, okay. So your music informs your painting. I was like, did I say that? Like, no. It's like, you know, it's like, I'm not always trying to draw the line. This is blurring it, actually.
Yeah.
How have you found London for inspiration for you, Teresa? Have you made work while you've been here, or?
I've been making tons of work.
Have you?
Yeah. I found it super inspiring.
It's also, have you been staying together while you're here?
Well, that's also really cool. I'm finally like working alongside Alvaro Studio again. We're neighbors again.
Oh, wow. Thank,
yeah. So I missed that. So that gave me a lot of juice. And then also just being in a new place. And
do you like London, the vibe here?
I do. I didn't think I would, but I really do.
I didn't know either.
Why did you get that?
First off, I'm a sun worshiper.
Right.
And I hate the cold and the wet.
Right.
But actually don't, I guess, because I'm doing fine.
Yeah. Well, we've had quite a nice long summer. It's not been too cold or too wet. So when it turns.
Well, I'll be out of here by then. No, why did we think I wouldn't like it? I don't know.
Because you're mad Brooklyn.
Yeah, I'm like a townie. You guys have that word?
Yeah. How long have you been in London for?
2 months now.
Wow, cool.
And I've got like another one ahead of me, and then I'm out.
Have you been to art galleries and stuff while you're here, and shows? And
yeah, we like fell right back into the groove of it. Like,
what have you seen here that you stood in front of then?
Well, I mean, we sort of named all those shows that opened up with ours, and yeah, that Lisa Bryce show had me shook. Yeah. I think she's my favorite painter right now.
Yeah,
also, the Jasmine Gervin's work at the Jasmine Chris Ofili collab show, which was cool because I mean, they have this collaborative show and we have this collaborative show.
Yeah. And also Shaka and Tennille. Going to LaGuardia with, that's Jasmine is their aunt.
There's all these weird crossover. Yeah. And so Shaka and Tennille played one of our events. Yeah. That's a drawing Albert made of them. They like one of the events leading up to our opening. They came and played.
So who are Shaka and Tennille?
Friends of yours from high school.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Are not they're married. Musicians. And
right.
Yeah.
What sort of music do they make?
I want to describe it wrong.
Okay. I'll describe it wrong. No, it's like really cool. I guess it's like kind of like a R&B reggae fusion of her really rocking the mic. She has like a set of pipes and him like behind spinning and like backup singing.
Oh, wow.
They had like a turntable set up and it was just cute sounds trivializing, but there was something charming about the music they made, and it wasn't separate from the relationship. It was like you knew, It was like, it was even her honest lyrics and just like the way they were interacting. It was fun. It was really fun to watch them perform together.
Great. So, like, they made a song about like storytelling. Like, she had to tell their daughter Nas about what it was like growing up in the hood. So she made like a child story, kind of like Slick Rick style, but like, it's like a real, it was like kind of.
It was sweet, but it kept it real. Cause you know, there were references to gunshots that were not over our heads, but you know, like, it was cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It was a lot of layers to.
Yeah. Plus also we wanted to like, I think even in the opening, we just wanted to have like a great fucking party. So We really liked to party.
How are you finding London? How are you finding it for working and living? And
man, just when I think I'm done with it, it pulls me back in.
You're teaching here. You're teaching here now.
Yeah, so where are you teaching? You're teaching.
I'm teaching at the Slade.
Amazing. To
and
go
have
back
you started
there.
Already?
Yeah.
Like right.
How's it going? Wow.
I mean, the kids are great. They're really articulate and smart. And I mean, last week we ended up. I mean, they have like an energy because we went. We started in the morning, like last Wednesday. We started at 10, looked at some of their work because they had an interim show up. Then we went to Mayfair and saw like a gang of shows. And then it was some openings that night. So we went to see a gang of openings. And then Elizabeth Payne had a show at the opening at the National Gallery. So like we ain't finished till like 10. And they were like, they were on it. You know, they were like.
You know, I think that's one of the best things as a teacher you can do is take art students to go and actually see art. Like I was talking to someone the other day about it in the 80s and she was saying that like nobody used to do that and it's really important for her. Actually it's the artist who works with Emmeline as well that we just interviewed. I'm so tired. Kembra Fala. We were talking to Kembra Fala about teaching at Columbia and she was saying one of the things she wants to do is actually take them to see art but also take them to like Broadway or take them out to do things.
Cultural events, because if you
go out into the world you'll actually have some kind of chain reaction that
I mean that's like, your story isn't it? That's your like mantra is that you are constantly looking, constantly being inspired, constantly growing. You say this thing, which is I find amazing, is that when you hate an artist's work, you challenge yourself to make work like that artist to understand why you hate
it. Yeah, or to understand why you don't like it.
I love
it.
That.
Yeah.
And that's what you are constantly doing. You're saying you're constantly a student as well just now, as earlier on. It's like amazing that's like your like thesis of life.
Yeah, I think people should fuck up more, you know, and then figure out a way out of it.
Do you find it hard, though, to fuck up now you're in this position where there's a lot of eyes on you as a really kind of like successful artist?
I mean, that's when I feel like the more reason to fuck up, you know?
Yeah.
That's when I feel like, yo, why don't we though? We're renting a building and we're going to throw some, we're going to have a good time in the building. You know what I mean?
Four floors of fucking up.
Four floors, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's when you feel like, all right, we got to figure some shit out. Because we're even, you know what's crazy? Like last week we went to see a gang of shows and we were talking about like people's bandwidth.
Right.
And there's some artists who operate within like from, if it's like 0 to 100, there's like some artists who like.
We had all these barometers. Freedom. Like.
Invention.
Yeah. Like, that was fun.
Yeah. But there's some artists, you see them and they're like, they kind of stay within like
a certain temperature, a certain energy. But yeah, I think the more you can change it up and keep people guessing.
Yeah. I think we both, like the thing that both like real about or connects us is we both want to like go to like 90. You know what I mean? Like you're an actor, but you've seen those actors who like kind of play the same role all the time.
Yeah.
Like they're band.
They basically
like,
play themselves.
It's quite safe.
Yeah, it's safe.
But it's a challenge to keep doing that. And also, I guess, as a gallerist or as a collector, if you're into an artist's work and then they do something completely opposite to that, I mean, you don't have to worry about that. But as a collector, sometimes you can be like, oh, hang on a minute. I was really liking what they were doing and I've got to get my head around this now. But I guess if you're connected to an artist and you want to stick with them, that's the whole point of it.
I never think about a collector when I'm making work. I just think, is this shit real or what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I feel like
pull a Gustin move every week if you can.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I feel like
the script.
The moment you're thinking about, is a collector going to like this shit? You're already fucked up.
Yeah, if you're doing it.
You're already fucked up.
Yeah, if you're just doing it, if you're too much worried about like, am I going to be able to make my rent next month if I make this series of drawings that I have to do, then I think you're in the wrong field. It's just not fair to art. It's like, I don't know. That's corny, but I
no,
feel
it's
that.
Not corny. I love that. It's not fair to art. That's great.
Who's art?
Yeah. And luckily with me and Teresa, we've been poor our whole lives.
Yeah, so we're not scared
of that
shit.
So we don't give a fuck about
that's,
that shit.
That's really funny.
Teresa, yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not afraid to sleep on a park bench or eat tuna for breakfast. Word. Like,
but I heard that as well, is that you said before this idea that in New York, it's so expensive to live now, just like it is in London, that if you wanted to be an artist and you really wanted to live in those cities, you almost at the age of 35 have to get with like 8 friends and live in a 2-bedroom apartment or something and just like have very little space in order to have a studio.
There's all kinds of hustles and that's the most common one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first you gotta let go of your ego. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's like,
yeah.
There was like, I was...
Yeah, girls be like, oh, I'm not going on a date to a pizzeria. And it's like, all right, well, then you're going on a date with someone else then.
Yeah, you gotta figure that out because I gotta pay.
Yeah, like, you know I spent my paycheck already.
Yeah, like I blew that shit on
you. You can come to my studio and drink tea on the floor if you want.
Right. Yeah. You ever tried to get into relationships and they're not even like the person so they can split the rent?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
sure.
The other hustle.
Yeah, sure.
So talking about art... We ask every guest that comes on Talk Art 2 questions. Mm. One is if you could do an art heist and we could help you like steal any artwork you like. We can always return it after if you feel guilty. But what would be a touchstone artwork that you would take home with you? It could be any size, it could be anything.
Shit, like to put you on the spot. I want to say something crazy, but all I can visualize is my favorite painting. But
well, that's good though. That's what we want
to
hear.
Or like the one that I love right now.
What?
That Baltus one with the fish flying. There's like a girl in a canoe. There's like a cat with like. Do you guys?
Yeah.
There's like a cat with like a knife and fork.
Who paints this?
Baltus.
Right.
I don't know if I've seen that.
He
one.
Usually paints like, you've seen like the what is it, the guitar lesson where he's, there's like naked little girls and like the spanking one. There's like all these controversial little girl paintings he made. But there's this one where. The only girl is in a canoe far away, and there's like a crazy cat with a rainbow.
Oh, I've got it here. Oh my god, it looks amazing.
I want that. Can you guys
get
that?
Wow.
So you guys are gonna get that for me.
We're gonna get you this. Yeah, okay. we're gonna hustle.
I need to live with that.
How big is it?
I don't know. I've never seen it in person.
That's interesting though, because seeing your paintings in this show, you can kind of see.
Yeah.
That is in your mind somehow.
Maybe I gave away too much.
No, it's good.
Edit this out.
We like that. That's cool. I'm going to post that on our Instagram.
What about you, Albert?
Definitely Baptism of the Christ.
Oh, yeah. That's your jam.
Piero. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And you've seen that in the flesh?
Yeah, it's down at the National Gallery. It's partly why I came to London, actually.
Ah.
Yeah. For that as like a pilgrimage for that painting.
Yeah, I mean, Guston's such a big part of my DNA, but he had wrote about...
All of Guston's practice, or the abstract ones, or the figurative
all of it,
one.
But
yeah.
Just like, I mean, some of his use of colors, like, if you look at my pink, that's like a Guston. If you look at red, that's my Guston.
Yes.
But then, like, looking at... Guston wrote about coming to London and looking at Piero and Nocello, and a lot of my color palette kind of comes out of Guston, and his comes out of, like, Nocello and them. So... That balance in Baptism of Christ is one of the most like insane things.
Piero della Francesca.
Yeah.
And how great you can just walk in and see it as well.
For free.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I mentioned to you before we started recording that I've been with Catherine Bernhardt this week and she was saying how much she loves your work. She was saying to me though that what should she do in London? And I said go and see Elizabeth Payton at the National Portrait Gallery and then also go to the National Gallery. And she said she loved it. She just went around the National Gallery and she was so blown away that it was free just to get in and you get to see all these iconic, incredible paintings.
I've gone back like 4 times since I've been here.
It's so good though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love just like popping in there sometimes. If you just happen to be in that area,
yeah.
I always try and run in, even if I just see one thing, because you can do that. You can just go in and see one painting.
And then you come out
and they're life changing though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just combining that. So, can you remember the first time you saw a Philip Guston in the flesh?
Those Nixon drawings.
I think Carrie Maher took us to see a show of his at McGee. That's when he really kind of stood out. But you could have seen him at the Met like way before.
Yeah.
But I think the first time I really 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 fucked with it was that McGee show, like, which was maybe 8 years. Yeah, before he got with Hauser, and way before, but like 2008.
Yeah, maybe. I was going to say
2010.
But he had died at that point, hadn't he? And Hauser took the estate on, didn't they?
Well, he had died a long, long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But McGee was his, like, primary dealer after Marlboro drop them.
I tried to read that book his daughter wrote because Drew recommended it to me because I'm also a Gustin freak, but I have to try again.
Yeah, his writings on art is sick.
Yeah.
But his writings itself is amazing.
Yeah.
So much energy from it.
There's a lot of video of him on YouTube as well talking about his work and, you know, lecturing and stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think there's like that Blackburn video of him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, other question we ask every guest is, what is your favorite color?
Dude, it's like, how do you ask a painter? Like, I don't have a favorite color.
I do.
You can say brown?
Red.
Red?
Red.
Why red?
I have a favorite color. Right. Yeah, but I don't want to say it. That's not like, you know what I mean? Like,
why? Why are you reluctant to say it?
Say all the ones you don't like then.
And then we work it out. Why are you reluctant to say it?
Why do I hate this question? I don't know why. I don't know. It feels like
it's feels, so simple, it feels, but reveals so
it
much.
It feels irrelevant.
To
like why have a it's like I choose colors based on what is necessary, so why have a favorite?
Well, that's an answer though. That means you don't have a favorite color, or that you don't want to disclose.
I know the one that I'm drawn to. You know, like I mean, there's too much blue in my wardrobe. You know, or like teal or what aqua family stuff. But like, I don't want anyone to put in my book that's not ever gonna get written. That's my favorite color. It's just the one that I get, the one that finds me all the time.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
You know, I don't know. I don't want a favorite color. I
okay, that's
have
fine.
One.
Love that.
And yours good is red.
What's your
red?
Favorite color?
Yeah.
Oh, he loves orange.
Orange. It goes between orange and pink, but generally orange, because I find orange really is, and it gives me energy somehow.
My yellow, little brother, yellow and blue. Who was like super quirky, only wore orange for like the first 8 years of his life.
Yeah, and I think not everyone wears it either. I love wearing orange because it makes me feel really like alive.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Is it like a bright orange or like more autumn kind of?
No,
orange?
I like bright orange.
My brother was obsessed with bright orange.
I've done that before. I'd have like bright orange jeans, bright orange jumper, bright orange t-shirt, and you wear the whole color. Mm. And there's something about immersing. I mean, it's not in art, this, but it's like as a experience in the world. I find myself much more positive and stronger somehow. A bit like I was talking about earlier in collaboration, and how you can be strong and how friendships can make you stronger as well somehow. Mm. I do believe that colors can influence your psychology.
Well, they took red out of all the subway trains in New York and changed all the seats. Remember in the, I think it was like the early 90s, early 80s, they made all the seats yellow and orange.
Why did they take red out?
It's making people too crazy.
Red's your favorite color, you said. Love that. But red's all about life force, though. So, like, they use red a lot in marketing of Coca-Cola, things like that. Because it's meant to be about blood, and you have, like,
a lot in your work, the hibiscus, which is a Caribbean flower.
Yeah, it's red.
That
comes in all kinds of colors.
Yeah, it does. It comes in red, yellow.
It's your red bike.
It's my baby.
No,
I didn't say it. I think, yeah.
What's your favorite color?
A blue or yellow.
Hmm. I can see that.
But you look like you have some regret, too.
Yeah, I do. I have color regret.
It's weird, right?
I guess once you put it out there, everyone's like, your favorite color is blue. But you said your favorite color was blue or yellow. Hang on a minute. You can't
I think it's important to be able to change, though, in life. Sometimes I want to be pink. Other time, but then
always,
I think pink and orange is somehow related. Thanks, babes.
I don't think you should be allowed to pick a favorite color.
I love this. This is the best answer. No one's ever said this. Normally people just go, some people have an answer straight away and it can be quite a
you're
weird color as well.
You're having an existential crisis about this.
No, like, I love it. This is like brilliant.
I've just got to say, we've actually got a connection, which you told me when I met you at that Joe Bradley dinner years ago, is that I did a show called Looking for HBO.
Yeah.
And you were involved with the prior incarnation, which was a pilot that Michael Lannon.
Yeah.
What is the story there?
You guys want the short or the long story?
Abridged.
The bridge. I just moved back, and I was working at PC Richard, and then...
What's that?
It's like a...
A home appliance and electronics store.
Okay.
A big chain.
And Michael...
Best Buy? Do you guys know Best Buy?
Yeah. We have Curry's here.
Okay. Yeah, Curry's. It's kind of like a Curry's. Yeah. But Michael came in with Alan, who was... Alan Coltier, who did like a lot of like The Sopranos and shit like that.
Yeah.
And then... We ended up talking, and I just had, like, randomly had dinner with Steve Van Zandt the night before. And they ended up talking anyway. He was like, oh, you should come. And then Michael and we all sort of ended up changing numbers, and they would hit me up whenever like they needed like some random shit. And then
like
Michael
set tapes or something. Is that what they were coming in for?
Like, no. Just like if they want to, if like they're like, oh, we're doing a shoot today.
Oh, right.
You want to come through and like be a hand. So Michael called me one day because he was shooting the pilot. And actually, if you Googled me for a long time, my high school baseball stat would show up, which I had none. And my IMDb when I helped Michael with that shoot.
That's so funny.
And then that became the pilot for Looking, which, of course, you started.
It's called Lorimer was the original one. Was
yeah,
it? Was
Lorimer. It yeah, yeah, because yeah, it was shot on Lorimer.
Yeah, yeah,
it was shot on Lorimer Street. Yeah. And so, like, that was my IMDb credit. And then he was like, oh, because he was planning to have it. He was like, oh, I'm going to thing it to HBO.
And then it happened. Looking and then it happened. Wow.
And then somebody was like, oh, yo, you know, Russell, he's on Looking. I was like, Looking? I was like, why that show sounds so familiar? And then, yeah. So then I hit, yeah. So yeah, it was weird, man. It was like, that's why I try not to get in trouble because, you know, you do shit like 20 years ago and somebody's like, remember when you was with my cousin? Like, who's your cousin?
Yeah.
Who's your cousin? Oh, word?
Or do you remember when you had that website?
Yeah.
Somebody help me delete
and you had
that.
To scroll and scroll and scroll.
It's a blog.
It's crazy that you asked me if you delete. I was like, nah, don't do that shit. Nobody cares.
Well, you were like, don't worry. You were like, don't waste your time worrying about it. And then here we are.
But I enjoyed going to that website, so it wasn't a negative. Yeah, but look, Teresa and Alvaro, thank you so much for coming on Talk Art. It's been so fun.
Thank you, guys.
And also, can you hear outside in the street, there's like some sort of party happening. I think they're trying to come and join us.
Well, that's what I like over here, because you could do shit like that. You know, like that party that we...
Yeah,
I mean, the opening for here at Emmalin when Wild Yaks and Ice Balloons was performing, that shit was so fucking lit, but also so loud. It was impossible. Couldn't do that anywhere else but here. You
love
know,
that.
In
How
London.
Much longer are you in London?
I'm here for a while.
At least a year.
Amazing. But I think we're renting this building for like 10 years.
Well, hopefully we get to see both of you lots more then.
Yes. Oh, I'll be back.
Good time. And we're going to be in New York next year. Russell's on Broadway, and I'm going to be coming out quite a lot to record interviews, so we have to hang out. We should come to
Congrats.
I'm there all year. Yeah.
And we're now going to go back into your wonderful exhibition, and we'll be posting pictures of both of their works on our Instagram at TalkArt.
Yes.
And we'll be back very soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks
for
listening.
Thank you.
Bye. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.